order. First up, we have Senate File 2393, Senator Murphy. Thank you, Senator Murphy. I believe you have the A3 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, I do have the A3 amendment, an author's amendment.
Awesome. Would you like to move it?
I'd like to move the A3 amendment and ask for your support.
Thank you. Senator Murphy moves the A3 amendment. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. To the bill as amended, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am happy to be before you today with the proposal, Senate File 2393, that is representing the work that we need to do for the state grant program here in the state of Minnesota. I represent a district in St. Paul. In the course of my tenure in the Minnesota legislature, I believe I have represented St. Thomas University, St. Kate's University, William Mitchell, part of Hamlin, St. Paul College, part of the University of Minnesota. I think I have them all. St. Kate's, did I say St. Kate's? Where I have been adjunct faculty. The district I represent is full of higher education institutions that serve Minnesotans in so many different ways. And what I have learned in my tenure is the state grant program is fundamental to the education of many young Minnesotans who are going to school. I grew up in a big family. I was the first of our family to go to school. We didn't have a lot of means, and so we were expected to put ourselves through school, which I was able to do by working as a waitress and borrowing a little bit of money. That's a lot harder these days for people. And what I understand from my years of experience is the state grant program is a path for students, sometimes without means, sometimes coming from different places to go to school here in the state of Minnesota and get a great education in the school of their choosing. I think that's important for us, and that is why I'm supporting this today and hope for your consideration and your support. And with that, we have a number of testifiers.
Thank you so much, Senator Murphy. President Cervenick, good to see you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am Paul Cervenick, and I serve as the president of the Minnesota Private College Council. I want to begin by thanking you, Chair Fattah, for hearing this bill today, and for thanking Senator Murphy for being its lead author. This year, there has been an increased legislative interest in declining post-secondary enrollment, which is a serious challenge for private colleges, just as it is for public colleges. In fact, it's really a serious issue for our entire state. So I want to start my testimony by sharing a critically important fact about declining enrollment. The largest declines in enrollment are occurring among students with the lowest incomes. Since the onset of the pandemic, across public and nonprofit Minnesota institutions of higher education, the enrollment of Pell Grant recipients has declined by 14%, compared to a 7% decline among students who are not Pell Grant recipients. Pell Grant recipients generally come from families with incomes under $60,000. Senate File 2393 is a bill that addresses these enrollment declines by proposing a $120 million increase in ongoing funding for the state grant program over the next biennium. Because the state grant program serves low-income and middle-income students, a state grant funding increase will provide significant additional financial support to the students who have fallen away from post-secondary education in disproportionately high numbers. Senate File 2393 proposes a reduction in the student share part of the state grant formula. The 50% student share was established in 1985, when college costs were markedly different than they are today. The student share is the only parameter of the state grant formula that is arbitrary and not based on an objective benchmark connected to the realities of paying for college. Students can pay for their share of the cost of college in two ways, by borrowing and by working while they're in school. However, it is simply not realistic for students to cover 50% of college costs through reasonable borrowing and reasonable work hours while taking classes. Research shows that when students work more than 10 to 15 hours per week, they don't have enough time for their studies, leading to reduced credit loads, longer time to degree, and decreasing the chances that they ever complete their degree. Asking students to cover 50% of their college costs also pressures students to borrow more than is reasonable. An analysis by the Office of Higher Education found that for the student share to be affordable, it would need to be lowered to 36%. When the student share is lowered, it reduces the burden of both tuition costs and living expenses, room and board, books, and other miscellaneous expenses at the same time. Lowering the student share to 42%, as proposed in this bill, would be a significant step towards meeting that affordability benchmark for low-income and middle-income students. If resources allow, it would be good to lower the student share even further. This investment will help more than 63,000 students because it will increase the average state grant award by $1,100. And it will increase the maximum state grant awards for full-time students with the greatest need by $1,850 to $2,700. Who are the students that are served by the state grant program? 39% of all Minnesota students receive a state grant, and 54% of all Minnesota students of color receive a state grant. 74% of state grant funds go to students with family incomes below $60,000, and the remaining grant funds reach into middle-class families making between $60,000 and $120,000. Research shows that a state grant increase will drive important outcomes, including increasing college enrollment, retention, and completion, while reducing overall college costs for students, holding down borrowing, decreasing the burdens of intensive work schedules, financial stress, and indebtedness, and increasing college attainment rates for low-income students and students of color and Native American students. Finally, the state grant program, in conjunction with the Pell Grant, already makes college tuition free for many low-income students at Minnesota's state colleges and universities. The most equitable way in which to expand the number of students who benefit from tuition-free college would be to greatly expand the reach of the state grant program. Importantly, such an approach would ensure that lower-income students at all four-year colleges in the state would be treated equally, including those students for whom a nonprofit college is the best fit for them and their educational goals. Students have the best outcomes when they enroll at a college that best fits their needs and aspirations. Thank you for your concern for students and for the challenges facing higher education institutions. As you consider how to address these issues, we urge you to make a significant new investment in the Minnesota State Grant Program. An increase in state grants will make a tremendous difference for the more than 60,000 students at both public and private institutions who rely on these grants to make their college and career aspirations possible. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, we have President Paul Pribinow. So please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Fete, members of the committee. I am Paul Pribinow, the president of Augsburg University. It is good to be back here, as I was a couple months ago, lifting up Augsburg. Today I'm here on behalf of the 18 institutions that are part of the Minnesota Private College Council, and actually the thousands of students across the state who attend either a private or public institution to speak in favor of Senate Bill 2393. I have been the president at Augsburg almost 17 years, and in that time, I have seen thousands of students come to our campus who have benefited from the state grant program that has allowed them to attend Augsburg because it was the right place for their education. Just a quick data point, Augsburg has about 3,200 students, 2,200 of whom are undergraduates. Our entering class, as I've noted the last time I was here, was almost 70% students of color, and two-thirds of Augsburg students receive a state grant. Two-thirds of our students receive a state grant that makes it possible for them to come to Augsburg. And I think I, again, would be speaking on behalf of all of my colleagues across the private colleges at the impact that the state grant program has on making college accessible to those students who deserve an education. I want to talk about how we think about financial aid, and you know, the state grant program is a key piece of this, but we never rely simply on one form of support for our students. The state grant program, along with the federal Pell Grant, together with families and the students themselves can bring to us through their own work or their own contributions, together with what Augsburg provides by way of financial aid, actually is a partnership that we think is critical, and we would never look to the government to provide all of that support. We look for that partnership to really exist, and as we work with our students and their families, they fully understand that. But what we're able to do, for example, at Augsburg, is that with a state grant, a Pell Grant, the other forms of support that we can provide, we have almost 20% of our entering class this fall that received a full tuition scholarship. That is, college was free for them because of that combination of support that they receive. I also want to talk about the importance of, for many of our students, for a four-year education. We have a wonderful system here in Minnesota of two-year colleges through the Minnesota State, the four-year Minnesota State institutions, of course, the University of Minnesota, and our privates. It's really a remarkable state for that. It's also a highly competitive state for that as a result of that kind of wonderful mix. But it's really important for students for whom the four-year experience is the right one, that they really have access to that, and the state grant program makes that possible. And I want to speak specifically about our experience here in the Twin Cities metro area. If you think about it, the only public four-year institutions that are directly in the metro area are either Metro State, which has a particular mission to serve working adults primarily, and the University of Minnesota, which, as you know, is a highly selective institution. And yet in the mix, there are several of our private colleges that are here, Hamline, St. Kate's, St. Thomas, Augsburg, McAllister, Minneapolis College of Art and Design, all members of our institution that provide our students that option for a four-year experience here in the Twin Cities. And we really want to kind of emphasize that that mix is, again, critical, I think, to what our students choose when they come to Augsburg and receive that state grant program. They want to be in a smaller setting, if you will, with small class sizes, with the interaction that comes with peers as well as with faculty members, to be in the middle of an urban area. So many of our students now come from the urban area, and they actually, many of them live at home. We have about two-thirds of our students who are commuters at this point, so they're saving money by living at home, but they still want to have access to a quality higher education that Augsburg provides. One of the things that's really critical also about this program, and you know this, is that this is the most equitable way to meet the needs of students. It's the choice that a student makes based on their income level, and at Augsburg, 70% of the students who receive the state grant are students of color. So you think about that, these are the future leaders of our community. They're going to lead businesses, corporations, they're going to be here at the Capitol, they're going to be in nonprofits, they're going to be good citizens living here in this area. We know that about 90% of our students, when they graduate, have a dedicated first destination. They're either going to graduate or professional school, or they have meaningful employment. And so those are important facts, I think, about what the state grant program does, not just to have them have access to higher education, but actually to know that they will stay in our communities and have the impact that we know a higher education community can have on the overall well-being of our communities. There's a key focus in higher education on social mobility and how we help students to make sure that they are coming to college so that they can go back into their communities, give back to their families, give back to their neighborhoods, give back in so many different ways. I would say in many ways, Augsburg's 153 years old right now, and that's what our Norwegian ancestors did 153 years ago. And we're still doing the same thing today with communities that perhaps look very different but are still really aspire to those same outcomes. So we're very proud of that. And again, the state grant program makes that possible. I want to close by just offering a quick story or two about recent grads who have actually benefited from the state grant program and are now doing the kinds of things that we would hope our education has prepared them to do. B.K. Korma, for example, came to Augsburg as an Act 6 scholar. This is a program that we have in a collaboration with Urban Ventures. Some of you know the Urban Ventures program in South Minneapolis. And this program brings students to us who aspire to be urban leaders. And so it carries with it a scholarship that includes a state grant that allows them to go to college completely free. And when he came to campus, he said, "I'm making a promise to you that I will be the leader you want me to be on campus." He was in the soccer team. He was a great student. He became the student government president. He probably testified here, if I remember right. And when he left us, he went off and he pursued various business interests, but he's now entering a PhD program in leadership and change. He's a Liberian immigrant who came to this state to go to high school and then stayed, and now is pursuing that kind of higher education that we know will prepare him to come back. Shamsa Ahmed is another example, Somali-American who grew up in the neighborhood around Augsburg, came to us also as an Act 6 scholar, ultimately graduated from Augsburg in 2021, had a Boren scholarship to study international languages, became a Fulbright scholar to South Korea, and is now entering a PhD program at Georgetown University so that she can join the Foreign Service. These are the outcomes that we expect and aspire our students to have, and the state grant program is at the core of making that possible. So I thank you for your attention, and I appreciate your support for this bill.
Thank you so much for your testimonies. Before we go on to our next two testifiers, do we have any questions for our first two? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I believe our next testifier is online on Zoom, Jesus Gonzalez Ruiz. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Fateh and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today through Zoom, all the way from Moorhead. My name is Jesus Gonzalez, and along with being a sophomore at Concordia College, majoring in finance and minoring in accounting, I'm also a recipient of the Minnesota State Grant, a recipient of the Act 6 Scholarship, the leader of two student organizations, the student body president-elect of Concordia College, a Capital Pathway scholar, a friend, a son, and an older brother. It's safe to say that without the Minnesota State Grant, I would only be half of those things. And before I go further, Chair Fateh, I want to thank you for doing your best to represent my neighborhood of East Phillips. And Senator Kupek, I want to thank you for representing my community in Moorhead. Chair Fateh and members of the committee, growing up in a neighborhood like East Phillips, being exposed to homelessness, alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, and gang violence, and other challenges, college was my only way out. I studied hard, participated in as many extracurriculars, got good grades, and made many connections with as many of my high school teachers as I could. By all accords, I was on a good path to college. But when my senior year came, things changed. I applied to several colleges, received many scholarship offers, but most of my offers were still expensive to me and my family, who struggled to get by before the pandemic, and even more in 2020, 2021, during the height of the pandemic, which occurred during my college admissions process. I was fortunate to have a teacher recommend me for the Act 6 scholarship that Concordia College offers, and then received that scholarship. Because when it came down to choosing which college was the most affordable and offered the best opportunities, Concordia College was the best choice. I was even more fortunate that Concordia College covered some expenses to visit its campus, where I met other Access scholars, some of whom are also Minnesota State Grant recipients, and concluded my decision to attend Concordia College, not just because it was affordable and offered many opportunities, but also because the scholars I talked to that day were some of the most welcoming and talented individuals I had ever met. Today, I visit Hiawatha Collegiate High School, my old high school, once or twice a year, to give advice to students about the college admissions process and share stories about my college experience. What I tell those students every single time I visit is that they should choose the college that offers them the most affordable education and the best opportunities possible. What I don't tell them as often is that what may be the most affordable option can still be expensive. That is why lowering the student share from 50% to 42% is crucial. Because with the rising cost of living, the financial barriers to most vulnerable students become deterrents for them to attaining a college education. Today, thanks to the Minnesota State Grant, me and my younger brother, a recipient as well, can pursue the things we want to do in life. We can go to a good college, be part of amazing opportunities and programs, and be in spaces many thought we couldn't be in, and inspire the next generation of leaders. Senators, today I'm here because someone back then invested in the future of the younger generations. I hope that you may do the same and support the generations of tomorrow through the passing of Senate File 2393. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for sharing your story and your testimony, Jesus. Next, we have Melody Herr. Welcome, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Melody Herr, she, they pronouns, and I'm a junior at St. Catherine University, double majoring in political science and economics with a minor in criminal justice studies. I am here today also as a recipient of the Minnesota State Grant, as well as a fellow of the Minnesota Capital Pathways Program. This program offers paid internship opportunities to young Black Indigenous people of color to cultivate leadership in policy and government. Through this program, I was blessed to receive a position as the public affairs intern at the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Chair and members, it's programs and support like this that empower me to be here today. I'm here to ask you to support Senate File 2393, increasing state grants for Minnesota college students. Personally, I am interested in the state grant program because it benefits our marginalized populations, including low to middle income and BIPOC undergraduates who attend community, technical, and private colleges. This program strives for education equity, and as a minor pursuing a college degree, this grant is very important to me. To reiterate, 39% of undergraduate students receive a state grant and would benefit from this investment. In addition to this, 54% of undergraduate students of color and Native American students receive a state grant and would also benefit from this investment. For some context, I began my first year at St. Kate's in 2020. Less than a year before that, and right before the pandemic, my dad suffered from a heart attack where he needed immediate medical attention and surgery. Then when COVID happened, myself and my two brothers lost our jobs and work hours due to quarantine. Since then, we've all been working really hard to earn these losses back. Today, I am 20 years old. I am working two jobs in addition to being a full-time student. I am very grateful and blessed to have received scholarships and grants provided by my university because I definitely feel that without the support of this state grant, I would be in a very different financial position right now. But my story is just one of many. I strongly feel that the Minnesota State Grant has allowed me to choose the best educational option for me in terms of finances, level of rigor, and programs of my desired major. I feel very lucky to be attending St. Catherine University, an all-women's college that is overwhelmed with strong and motivated women. Progressive conversations of gender inequality and advocating for social justice in local, national, and international contexts. I know that there are many students who are just as grateful to be attending this university with the assistance of the Minnesota State Grant. And as our elected officials, we would love your support. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions from our members? Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is probably for Mr. Cermenik, because I'm just curious. This is something I'm thinking about. Obviously, we all support education. Obviously, we all support the state grant. But just for more clarity on my sake, maybe you have this data, maybe you don't. But we say 39% of students in Minnesota who go to college receive a state grant, and 54% of the students of color receive a state grant. What percentage of that 39% who receive a grant are students of color?
I don't think I can answer that question. Right out at the table, sure. But we'll be glad to try and get it for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm just going to check. Yeah, our researcher says she can get it, so we'll get it.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Zemanek. I don't normally do math, but this sounds pretty interesting to me, so I want to check it out.
Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Thank you, Senator Murphy, for bringing this bill forward. I appreciate that it's pretty simple, and I think it highlights and is proposing to give funding to something that clearly has a tremendous impact to many students and families across the state. And I know that budget targets were just recently released within, I don't know, the last few minutes or hour. And as we consider how that's going to impact the conversations we have here on the Higher Education Committee, I hope that we're mindful of and take action and fund the things that we think are going to be most impactful to students in making college and higher education more affordable, while also doing right by the institutions that have to carry out that mission. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Duckworth. Are there any other questions or comments? Senator Umu Verbane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm always excited to hear from students. One of my concerns is just that the state grant is being distributed equitably. And when we look at the average amount of state grant for our state universities, the University of Minnesota versus our private colleges, are receiving significantly more. And I think that is in large part due to high tuition and then higher aid. And I'm really concerned about that model of providing more money for the state grant and then enabling private institutions to continue to raise tuition on our students. And I think that, you know, we have institutions that are really accepting, have a duty to accept a wide variety of students, and our private institutions are a lot more selective about that. I also just would encourage our committee to stay committed to funding public education. I think that is our number one duty here at the legislature. Those are my concerns. That's where the direction that I hope you'll take, Chair, and that our committee will support.
Thank you so much, Senator Umurbin. President Cirkvenik or President Cirkvenik or Senator Murphy, any?
Mr. Chair, I would say a couple of things just to clarify things about the state grant. For students at nonprofit institutions, the amount of tuition that's covered by a state grant is capped at the University of Minnesota's tuition. So our tuition structure does not enable us to get a grant that is larger than a student would get at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. Secondly, when you look at the data about the number of students who participate in the program and the amount of dollars in the average grant, the numbers for the nonprofit colleges and the University of Minnesota as a whole system are about the same. So I don't think that there's something about the state grant program that disproportionately benefits private colleges. In fact, just the opposite. Our students at our colleges get the same grants they would at a public system, and they get it without the direct appropriations that help hold down tuition at public institutions. And I just close by saying, in the whole higher education budget, only 3% of higher education, 3.5% of higher education spending benefits students at private colleges, and that's entirely through the state grant program. So it's a very small investment with a very big impact for the state.
Senator Umurbin, good.
Again, Mr. Chair, I'll just, the state has a duty to fund public education. So that's why there's appropriations for the University of Minnesota and the MinState system.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Putnam. Oh, Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I might have missed this. I apologize. I came in a little bit late. Can the state grant be used for, of course, it's used in private schools. Can it be used for technical schools like Hibbing Community College? Okay, so then my comment, so we heard it a few weeks ago, the chair's bill to fully provide college at the state universities. I kind of prefer the state grant system better because it allows students flexibility. I mean, I would rather see that sort of funding go to the state grant system so that students could choose to go, whether it was the University of Minnesota, and perhaps more of the University of Minnesota would be included, whether it's Augsburg or my alma mater, St. Thomas, certainly not St. John's. but I like that flexibility because, you know, all schools aren't exactly the same and they don't meet the same needs. And so the thing I like about the state grant is that it is more flexible to allow students to go where they would want. So that's my position.
Thank you. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Senator Farnsworth, for that. But also, I'm not trying to pile on private colleges. obviously they serve a role and they're very important. But I'm approaching this in a way very similar to what Senator Umar verbatim is, in that I think 2 or 3 years ago we had a conversation, a hearing on the state grant. And I'd been told that at that time 60% of the actual money from the state grant goes to 40% of the students. Because the state grant doesn't actually, it sure it helps people to go to college, but it also helps them choose which college they go to. So that some people would say that if they get a higher percentage of a grant, a higher award to go to a private college than they would go to a public college that had significantly less tuition because it's a lower number. Do you know current data about percentage of resources and the number of students that they go to?
President Cirkunek?
I can't rattle that off at the top of my head precisely, but we could provide that to you, Senator.
And I say, Mr. Zemanek, I don't recall the number exactly either, but I remember it being something.
Senator Funa, maybe someone from OHE might have that information. Thank you, Ms. Whelan. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nicole Whalen, and I'm the State Grant Research Manager at the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Senator Putnam, if I'm understanding your question correctly, are you asking what percentage of state grant funding is directed towards different types of institutions? Is that the question you're asking?
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that'd be super interesting, too. But I'm more interested in the sheer amount, dollar amount in terms of the number of students who get that dollar amount. So as I said before, we'd heard in a hearing 2 years ago that 60% of the actual total dollar amount went to 40% of students who are applying. So there's a disproportionate effect that it's not spread out equally, but that a smaller portion, you get a bigger grant to go to a more expensive school. So accordingly, you're getting more money for that grant, but you're still just one person. Does that make sense?
Ms. Whalen.
Mr. Chair, yes, that does make I think I'm tracking what you are asking. But I'm sorry, I'm struggling to kind of come up with the right answer for your question. So I think what you're wondering is kind of relative, are you asking what kind of relative grants a student might receive depending on, you know, the kind of institution they're going to, or kind of total, or is it more like total state grant dollars and where those are allocated by institution type? Is that?
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry if I'm being opaque. I'm not trying to be, I'm just curious. So we say we got five people, and they're gonna go to five different schools. One person, say two people, go to a private school that costs $10,000 a year, and they get $5,000 in a student grant. So from that ratio, then 40% would get that much money. Now, let's say those last three people go to a community technical college, where their state grant, because it's a function of tuition, is only $2,000 or $3,000. Those three students would have gotten $6,000. Those two students would have gotten $10,000. So what I'm trying to ask is, how does that map out to the state as a whole? Does that make any sense at all?
Ms. Whalen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Putnam, yes, I think what you're asking is kind of by institution type, or like we might say institution system. So for example, the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State Colleges, private nonprofit institutions, what kind of percentage or what total dollar figure of our state grant budget is but ends up at each institution? Yes?
Senator Fundo.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think that would help. That would be a step in the right direction. That's not exactly what I'm looking for, because clearly there's a lot of tuition flexibility within the private colleges as they're in within the state system. But that would get us a little bit more clarity on what I'm trying to get at.
Ms. Whalen.
Absolutely. Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I can speak generally to that, and I'd be happy to follow up with more specific numbers afterwards. I would say in general, the bulk of the students that receive state grants do attend Minnesota State Colleges. But in terms of actual funding, where is the funding going? I would say, by and large, a majority of state grant funding is directed towards either the University of Minnesota and students at that institution system, or students attending private nonprofit colleges. And that is, as you said, that is a function of the tuition and fees that are charged at those institutions.
Senator Putnam.
That's super helpful. You could have saved us the last 10 minutes of me being completely incoherent, because that was spot on. Thank you.
Thank you. President Srebrenik.
Mr. Chair, what I would just like to clarify is the size of a grant is based on tuition, which varies, and living expenses, which are the same for every student. And because the grant varies so that a student has real choice. If what's best for them is a four-year institution, the grant is larger because the four-year institution costs more. Even at Minnesota State, the four-year institution costs more than the two-year institution. And so what the grant is doing is trying to meet the needs of the student at whichever type of education is best for them. And I don't think we would want a system of flat grant where it worked at a low-cost institution but denied low-income students or diverse students the opportunity to be at an institution like the University of Minnesota or Augsburg, if those were there. Those were places that best served their aspirations.
You good, Senator Putnam? Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Umover-Bain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up because Senator Putnam, I think this might be getting at some of what you were asking as well, but you know, the average state grant for Hamline University is $5,661. Augsburg is $5,590. We go to Century College, it's going to be $997. I mean, you could send five more students that grant amount. The tuition is lower. I mean, that's what it is. So we increase the state grant, they can increase tuition. I mean, that's essentially sending a voucher out to a private institution.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you. Well, this conversation has led me to have a question or two now. So as it relates to the state grant, is there a need component that's taken into consideration when these grants are awarded to students? And in your estimation, I guess what's weighed heavier, the actual need base of the student and family or the tuition of the institution they plan to attend?
President Srebrenik.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, the needs analysis is the first step in the process. Students fill out the FAFSA and it determines what the capacity of the family is to contribute to the cost of college. The student pays 50% of the cost, and then the FAFSA determines what share the family can pay after taking into account that whether or not a student gets a Pell Grant. So it is absolutely a needs-based formula.
I appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Duckworth.
This is just more of a comment for maybe additional information as we're kind of seeking some of this. I'd be curious to see. I know we've had conversations about the amount of the grant potentially varying based on what institution a student ends up at, also taking into account the need regarding them and their family. It would be curious to see as well, depending upon institution, or if we just want to make it more simple, public versus private, what percentage of tuition that grant ultimately covers, and to see some comparison there. I think that would also be a useful piece of information. That's all I've got, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
President Srebrenik.
Mr. Chair, just one additional point of clarification about why grants vary by institution. They vary in part whether a student status, any individual student status, is full-time or part-time. If you enroll part-time, you have smaller tuition and your grant is smaller. An institution that has a large share of part-time students has a smaller average grant than an institution that has primarily full-time students. And I would just add, an increase in the grant would make it possible for students who are struggling to enroll full-time, more possible for them to do it.
Thank you. Any other questions? I guess my last question is why is the state grant award tied to the highest University of Minnesota tuition rather than Minn State, a four-year institution?
Well, that's how the state grant program has been since 1985, and I think it reflects the fact that there's no other state investment made in our institutions that holds down tuition costs. And so I think that's a fair marker for a institution, a grant at an institution that receives no other state support to reduce tuition.
Senator Umar-Rabin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking about Senator Swedzinski, who always likes to remind us of the Constitution or constitutional duty, uniform system of public schools. That's all I'll say.
Thank you, Senator. Any last questions from our members? Senator Murphy, would you have closing comments?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. It is clear that we have difficult and very important work to do in front of us in the next couple of months, and I am grateful for your time today.
Thank you. Would you like to move your bill to be laid over?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate file.
As amended.
Yeah, 2393 be laid over for possible inclusion as amended. Thank you.
Thank you. The bill as amended is laid over. Thank you so much, Senator Murphy. Thank you, Mr. President. Next, we have Senate File 687, Senator Putnam. Senator Putnam, I believe you have the A2 amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Would you like to move in and tell us a little bit about it?
Certainly, just very briefly. The A2 amendment adds a section at the very end of the bill. We've been working on this for a couple of years now, and we've refined the language on that component. Initially, we sort of took it out. We put it back in with much more refined language, and then it adds numbers for how much stuff costs.
Awesome. Thank you, Senator Putnam. Senator Putnam moves that the A2 amendment be adopted. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate File 687, as I admitted earlier, is something we've been working on for a while. And the larger goal that we're dealing with is the same in this bill. It's the same goal that we face in higher education every day. We are trying to prepare complex people for a complex world, and that is the goal of this bill. And that's what we can do in higher education, to help everyone do a little bit better, given the circumstances in which they live. So because the bill is fairly complex, I think it might be most appropriate if I talk through its individual sections very quickly with a couple illustrations, and then we've got lots of testifiers to really kind of flesh out what means what. First, Section 1 lowers the student responsibility for the state grant from 50% to 36% of the cost of attending an institution. Section 2 changes the living and miscellaneous expense allowance from 109% to 115% of the federal poverty guidelines for a one-person household. Section 3 changes the lifetime state grant eligibility from 8 semesters to 10 semesters that the student is enrolled. So those three provisions all deal with the state grant that we were just discussing, and they're an effort to increase the state grant to reflect affordability and the needs that individuals have in going to school. The last of those three, I think, is the most important from my perspective. In the real world, it takes people longer than 4 years to get done with college sometimes. So I think that extension of time is appropriate and overdue. Sections 4 and 5 amend the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities Chapter of Law. Section 4 requires a college or university to determine whether an individual's performance on a standardized test exempts the individual from a developmental course and inform the individual if a developmental course is required. Folks, this is incredibly important. First, it changes the language from remedial to developmental. That in and of itself is worth our attention and our effort. But more importantly, I got originally very interested in this bill and in this work from my friend Dr. Peterson, who's going to be up here just a little bit, because of stories that I heard at St. Cloud Community Technical College of individuals who would go to school, and maybe English wasn't their first language, and to find out what kinds of classes they should be put in, they would take a test called the AccuPlacer. the occupacer would then decide that they had to take what were called remedial classes at the time. Those classes are typically not credit-bearing. So you have individuals taking on debt for classes that do not count towards their graduation. Now, the occupacer is one metric. What we're asking for is to simply use two or three metrics, the occupacer and your ACT score and your GPA, so that people aren't being wrongfully put in positions where they have to take remedial classes. You could have all kinds of tremendous intellectual capacity and skill, say in math, but maybe English isn't your first language. You don't do well on the test. And you end up taking a couple years of remedial classes, using all your loans, and you end up in debt without a degree, all because you were mistakenly put in a certain variety of class. This is a very important intervention, Mr. Chair and members. Continuing on this train, prohibits a college or university from placing an individual in a developmental non-credit class based solely on the testing process. That extends what I was just discussing. So Section 4 changes the name, basically. Section 5 talks about using other metrics. Section 6 requires a commissioner of the Office of Higher Education to conduct a study of the work-study program and analyze how the program could be expanded to enable more students to work on campus. Mr. Chair, members, that's a fantastic way for students to pay for their way through college. We know that these days, with the difficulties of working and transportation, that it's incredibly hard for college students to have a job off campus sometimes. Well, we just are asking OHI to think a little bit about the work-study process and the kinds of opportunities that are available, and think about ways to make them more accessible and appropriate. Section 7 appropriates funds for Minnesota State campuses to pursue innovations for students transferring within the system. In some other states, if you go get a two-year degree, you're automatically enrolled in four-year programs if you'd like to be at a state school. And the curriculum are aligned, and it's pretty easy to get through. In Minnesota, it's not so easy. So we're talking about counselor hubs, advisors, investing in resources to help people realize that the credits that they took in their two-year program can count in this way in their four-year program. So it's really just a way of facilitating transfers between two- and four-year programs. Section 8 appropriates funds from the commissioner to grants for public post-secondary institutions to support professional development for faculty and staff in anti-racist teaching practices, which is something I can talk about at length if you want me to, but I'm not going to bore you quite yet. Most institutions of higher learning at this point have diversity and equity inclusion sections. They often have faculty with expertise in that area. And so this would be an opportunity to support that professional development work that's conducted at each individual institution. The rest of the stuff is kind of technical. Section 9 and 10 are technical. So, Mr. Chair, members, that's the bill. It's complicated. There's lots of stuff going on in it. I'm eager to talk about all of it, but more importantly, let's hear from some other people who are impacted by it. So if we could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn to our testifiers.
Thank you so much, Senator Putnam. Our first testifier is Kevin Martinez Herrera. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, everybody, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Martinez Herrera, and I grew up my whole life in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and I am honored and privileged to represent St. Louis Park High School. And hello, Mr. Chair, and once again, members of the committee, thank you for having me here, and it is my pleasure to come back to the Capitol after recently testifying for HR 2258 as well. I hope you will give your best attention, and as you sit back and listen to my testimony from a high school lens, from what I'm about to share. So Minnesota is my home. No, Minnesota is our home. As many of you have gone through yourselves from the moment you stepped into your kindergarten classrooms, making your first friends, going to senior year, up until it's about time to graduate from college, we are left with a big moral and systemic issue as to how underrepresented Black, Indigenous, or students of color from different economic backgrounds are going to be the future leaders of Minnesota, with the worry of disparities and systemic systems of institutional oppression in higher education and set in place for all of us. Today, I will be sharing my testimony from my own high school experience and how it affects me and many others today. As a first-generation Mexican student, during this month and season of college acceptances, many of my friends and classmates and I may be happy to be admitted to a college, but there's a huge concern present in my high school and from those around me. How am I going to pay for X amount of money? Why do they, college and branches of government, think we are? For example, coming from a Latino background and enrolled in Spanish for Heritage Speakers junior year, every one of my peers and friends in that class come from similar cultures and backgrounds that are underrepresented in higher learning and education. Meaning, family means everything to us, and having our parents work full or overtime jobs in order to meet basic need ends, and then all of a sudden we want to enroll in college education, which seems impossible for many of us. Many of us working part-time jobs after school, taking care of our siblings while our parents work hard to provide a roof over our heads, and the thought of not going to or dropping out of college because we can barely afford college tuition even after our financial aid are our thoughts that happen at our very same high schools and part of the institutional forms of oppression many underrepresented black, indigenous, and students of color face. Imagine encouraging and speaking out that students should finish a college education to find opportunities, but we have high schoolers and even college students talking in our classrooms that that dream is far from real. Just because we are focusing on underrepresented BIPOC students and tackling to disrupt institutional forms of oppression, education, and higher learning doesn't mean other students aren't important as well. Think of it as a track and field sprint race where one individual has more hurdles to jump while another individual has a more clear and straight path to run with less hurdles. The objective of this bill before us is to ensure, okay, how are we going to have individual A have less hurdles and a clearer path and equal opportunity as to run as individual B. Being a senior, for many of you may know, means college apps, FAFSA, and decision season. For me, personally, that meant applying to 14 different colleges and spending time essays, submitting FAFSA and CSS profiles and supplements to colleges mainly on my own. Being a student with different intersections in education and higher education should be involved in students' lives even before college, from investing resources to better shape even at our schools, our own multilingual learner programs, more access to financial supplements, resources, and money to help submit college fees to colleges. Not will this be helpful for underrepresented BIPOC students, but help them have the resources that they might not have at hand. As a senior in high school who has found a passion in healthcare and future goal in dermatology, I want to give back to my community and other individuals who have been affected by racial disparities. But I know I shouldn't be worrying about the long-awaited medical debt and, for many others, being discouraged about going into the healthcare profession because of the money of tuition, rather than focusing on how many years it's going to take to repay everything, but on how will be ready to help future patients in need. When the time comes to hold my diploma and as I walk on the graduation stage this June and say goodbye to my years in high school, I hope in a future where higher education will implement the blueprint for the new future of Minnesota leaders, where they can enjoy the same journey and the same education as I and as many of you guys did, a future Minnesota where one of their least worries during their senior years, college years, and graduating years is how are they going to pay back their college debt, calculating how many years it will take for them to pay back their student loans, reflecting how the college experience could have been different if senior year they could commit to their dream college in Minnesota without facing disparities and financial burden of, can I pay or can I even go here? I hope I inspire many students who are watching this and many other Latino students from preschool up to high school. I know many of you have children, grandchildren, or close ones, and together we can build their pathway to success to be the future leaders of Minnesota. Minnesota is our home, and we have been through different obstacles from one another, and having the voice and power, wouldn't you want your grandchildren or child figure be able to have the opportunity to prosper and show their intellectual minds all across the state of Minnesota? By coming together and eliminating college tuition, helping those from underrepresented communities, families, or parents worrying about the cost of attendance of their children, I know together Minnesota will continue to be the blueprint for higher education for other states where students and especially underrepresented BIPOC students and future generation of leaders from various cultures and from various fields of study will become someone without having that financial barrier and provide back to the great state of Minnesota socioeconomically and attracting new minds to the state while being, well, all while being to see our beautiful state prosper and future minds as leaders as one Minnesota by allowing the chance and opportunity once again for underrepresented BIPOC students to bring intellectual creativity, prosperity, and knowledge from academics from all over the state of Minnesota and disrupting that institutional form of oppression found in education, such as college tuition. They will have a huge relief of worry off their minds rather than worry the use of, rather, and use their intellectual minds to the fullest in post-secondary education. There are many ways from which money can come from, but for us, money starts and comes from intellectual creativity, prosperity, and knowledge from Minnesota students. Investing resources to disrupt institutional forms of oppression help underrepresented BIPOC students wanting to pursue a post-secondary education. Not only will this allow success from, but us as a community of Minnesotans to thrive. Not only is having college tuition covered, but this means more and more underrepresented BIPOC individuals from families will go out there and pursue an education, but we will see a huge socioeconomic stimulation in Minnesota as more individuals from various cultures, economic backgrounds, and fields of study to help Minnesota thrive. Because of this, Minnesota will be able to find experience from many young people that enroll in jobs such as in the medical field, business field, art field, or even on the political side and someday sit before you and help our state prosper and increase in jobs that lack more people today and boost the job market. There is nothing wrong with using the tools and instruments of our government to help create the blueprint to disrupt institutional systems of oppression in higher education and help the next generation of youth and students of Minnesota. I would like for you all today to see the critical importance of investing in the state grant program as the main lever for making college more affordable for students and keeping the debt burden low would mean a chance for students like me and others to get an education and provide back to our beautiful cold state of Minnesota. Thank you for all your time, and I hope together as one Minnesota, we can come together to pass and come to agree on this bill for the future leaders of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I believe our next testifier is on Zoom. Zeke Jackson, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Higher Education Committee. Thanks for your time. My name is Zeke Jackson. I am a senior at the University of Minnesota studying political science and entrepreneurship. Outside of school, I'm serving as the U of M's Twin Cities student body vice president, and I'm also the executive director at People for PSCO, a nonprofit, student-led nonprofit. I'm here today in my, however, my personal capacity to express my strong support for SF 687. I think that this will enhance access, affordability, and success in Minnesota's higher education system, especially for low-income students and underrepresented students. So I'm going to limit my testimony. I want to touch on three of the key proposals that you see in this bill, because I think that these three pieces are particularly important to me and other college students across the state. So the first one I want to touch on is the state grant program, which, as it was stated earlier, would be lowering the assigned student responsibility from 50% to 36%. This change, I think, is really important because it'll reduce the reliance from students on taking out student loans. So as a student grant recipient, I'll be graduating this semester. I'm a senior, but if I had that extra money, it would have gone towards things like paying my bills, paying for groceries, towards saving to someday buy a house. And I think Kevin was very eloquent in stating that students our age are incredibly anxious about meeting these basic needs. In addition to handling the thousands or tens of thousands of dollars of debt that we're taking on by getting an education. So for me, from my first year to college or now to now, the entire time I've been working either two or three part-time jobs. And I know a lot of other students have been put in similar situation. The second part of the bill that I want to talk about is calls for a study on the benefits and work study programs for students conducted by the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. So I think this research would provide the state and policymakers valuable insights on how to increase financial support, wages, and accessibility for students in need. Because I think there's a lot of limitations of work study programs that I've just personally seen. So I'm eligible for work study at the University of Minnesota. One of the main reasons I never utilized it is because I could make a lot more money working online or off campus than I could while I was on campus. And I'm lucky and privileged that I had the resources, like a car, for example, to go off campus and to do those jobs. But I'm sitting here and I'm wondering what other challenges prevent a very well-intentioned program like this from being more effectively executed around the state. And I think that a bill like this can help us answer that question. The third one is how it advocates for the appropriation of funds for challenge grants to pursue these innovative solutions or ideas or programs for student transfer processes. By addressing those loss of credits and excess credit accumulations that often occurs during transfers, my hope is that it would minimize the time and the cost of degree completion for students. Because frankly, a lot of us are really tired of the red tape and frankly, arbitrary hurdles that often come along with transferring college credits, especially across state lines. A lot of us really feel nickeled and dimed every time we're told that we have to retake a course just in order to graduate. And I think a lot of us would welcome new programs, strategies, and ideas on creating more student-centered transfer process. So overall, this bill addresses what I think are some really important challenges faced by the state, and that I think are really reflective of the needs of our student today, the students today and in the future as well. So I urge this committee to please support this bill and help secure a brighter future for our state students. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next we have Kim Hildahl. And I believe Kim is also on Zoom.
Yes. Hello. Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hello. My name is Kim Hildahl, and I am the director of the TRIO Student Support Services Program at Carleton College. And I also serve as the president of the Minnesota TRIO Association, which is a nonprofit association that represents over 200 educational opportunity professionals and 15,000 low-income, first-generation, underrepresented students, veterans, students and disabilities from middle school to adult learners across the state of Minnesota. I'd like to take a few minutes of your time this afternoon to show support on behalf of the Minnesota TRIO Association for Senate File 687, specifically proposals 1 through 3. So Minnesota currently ranks 17th in the nation for total grant aid awarded by a state to students and 18th in the nation for average state grant spending for full-time students. Minnesota ranks 20th overall for state grant aid expenditures as a percentage of state fiscal support for higher education. Yet we also rank 12th in the nation for average tuition costs at public four-year institutions and 4th for average tuition costs at public two-year institutions. As a result, this makes Minnesota a high tuition and low state aid low aid state in terms of higher education, which has negatively impacted enrollment. This has created yet another barrier for college access and success for our low-income students. And these obstacles prevent some of Minnesota's best and brightest from gaining skills in in-demand trades or by going to school to become a teacher, nurse, computer scientist, or whatever career they aspire to. As Minnesotans, we cannot accept this as the status quo. Other states look to us as a leader in terms of quality of our post-secondary institutions, and we should also lead the way in college affordability. It's important to note that 72% of this funding would go to families with incomes below $60,000. The Pell Grant has been in place since 1973 when the maximum award was $1,400. And if you adjust that for inflation, the Pell Grant should be worth almost $10,000 today. However, it maxes out at $6,895. If we look back over the last 10 years, the purchasing power of the Pell has actually decreased by approximately $300, and it is our responsibility as the state of Minnesota to fill in these gaps. In speaking with some of my Minnesota TRIO colleagues at Hennepin Technical College, this proposal would be a game changer for adult learners who have stopped out of school due to systemic barriers and maxed out their Pell awards. Minnesota has a responsibility to help close these gaps so that our lowest income students can complete their post-secondary credentials. I recently met with one of my own students who was overwhelmed because she couldn't register for classes due to a hold on her student account for just a few hundred dollars. For many students, a few hundred dollars in increased grant aid will ensure that they can continue to persist in school. I also think back to my own time as a low-income first-generation student. When I started college, I didn't realize the additional expenses that were associated with college, and I couldn't afford to purchase my textbooks. After spending some time in an unsympathetic financial aid office, I was offered $300 in an emergency loan to help cover the cost. This was essentially a tax on me being a low-income student because I had to pay interest on a loan because I couldn't afford to purchase my books, unlike my wealthier peers who could buy them outright. The second piece I'd like to speak on is increasing the calculation of living and miscellaneous expenses from 109 to 115%. We know that BIPOC students disproportionately face systemic economic barriers, which were magnified by the pandemic. For example, in Minnesota, 33% of first-generation college students and 43% of Black students face food insecurity. This change in the calculation of living and miscellaneous expenses will help the lowest-income students to cover basic needs, which is a critical barrier to college access and completion. Finally, I'd like to speak on the third proposal, which is extending the state grant eligibility from 8 full-time semesters to 10. Changing the existing policy would provide more aid and will proportionately support people of color and Indigenous students and transfer students to complete college and attain a degree and or their credential. We also know that underrepresented students are over-magnified or over-misidentified in the developmental education courses, which do not count for toward graduation requirements, so they end up using their grant funds to pay for additional classes that they might not have ever even needed. Additionally, this grant would continue to cover tuition for students whose baccalaureate degree programs take more than 120 credits to complete, such as teaching, accounting, or nursing. I can personally attest to the added stress that these programs put on low-income students. I also hold a Minnesota teaching license, and during my time as a student, during my student teaching semester, I was essentially paying tuition to work a full-time job of student teaching on top of my 30-hour-a-week work job waiting tables just to make ends meet. This scenario continues to play out for low-income students across the state. Again, an increased investment in the Minnesota State Grant Program is an investment in our growing economy, workforce, and equitable education opportunities for all Minnesotans. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions for our first three testifiers? Seeing none, our next is Rashandra Brown. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rashandra Brown. I'm a current board member of the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership and also serve on the College Race Equity Advocacy Advisory Council. But I also come here today as a community member committed to higher education access and equity for people of color and Indigenous students. I'm here today to offer support for the higher education bill. The bill contains numerous proposals, many of which I support. And in particular, I'm here to speak in support of two proposals. First, I would like to speak in support of the proposal that the Minnesota Legislative increase the living and miscellaneous expenses from 109% to 115% and extends the calculation from 9 months to 12 months. Increasing the calculated living allowance allows the systemic economic barriers people of color and Indigenous students disproportionately face in racially predictable ways to be decreased and will increase their attainment of college degree or credential by providing them more time and more financial aid to live above the poverty level during the summer months. People of color and Indigenous students are living in poverty, struggling to buy food and other necessities to survive. We cannot expect students to succeed academically in higher education when they are living in poverty. Second, I would like to speak in support of the proposal to appropriate funding for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education to issue challenge grants to post-secondary institutions to support faculty and staff in receiving professional development and anti-racist teaching practices relating in higher education. Such a strategy will help in providing faculty and staff at campuses the opportunity to build awareness and capacity to teach and work with students in higher education from an anti-racist set of mental molds and practices. In my line of work, I spend time working directly with people of color and Indigenous students who are ambitious and hardworking. They have dreams and set goals of launching successful careers in the region after they complete their degree or certificate programs, but are facing systemic barriers while pursuing their education. Barriers that the proposals in this bill address. If we hope to build a 21st century workforce of diversely talented individuals in the region, then I urge members of the committee to continue to invest in higher education for people of color and Indigenous students. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Dr. John Peterson. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tolu Falava, greetings. My name is Leotawa, Dr. Robert John Peterson. I work with the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership as a long-term consultant. I'm here today to offer my support for Senate File 687, as well as acknowledge the ongoing efforts of the chair, vice chair, and the committee members to lift up the crucial importance of higher education in Minnesota. First, I support the proposal requiring colleges and universities to provide students notification of when they have been exempted from having to enroll in developmental education courses. Adoption of this proposal would positively impact students by increasing their acquisition of college credits leading toward a degree and or a credential, and by maximizing the benefit provided by receiving student financial aid. Second, I would like to speak in support of the proposal relating to the use of multiple measures in determining whether or not a student will be required to enroll in a developmental education course. According to research from the Community College Resource Center, CCRC, at Teachers College, Columbia University, evidence suggests that many more students would successfully pass introductory college-level courses if they avoided prerequisite developmental courses altogether and were instead granted direct access to college-level courses in their first term of college enrollment, with additional support provided for some students. According to the study by the CCRC titled Five Principles for Reforming Developmental Education from October of 22, one common strategy to increase access to college-level courses is to use multiple measures, including high school GPA, instead of standardized test scores alone to assess incoming students and assign them to developmental or college-level courses. Third, I would like to speak in support of the proposals to expand the state grant program by reducing the assigned student responsibility, the ASR, in relation to the cost of attending the institution of the applicant's choosing from 50% to 36%, increasing LME from 109% to 115%, and expanding the state grant eligibility from 120 credits to 150 credits. Each of these proposals are supported by the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership policy brief and white paper titled Reducing Disparities, Racial Disparities in College Completion from 2020. The rising cost of tuition, inflationary increases, and the pandemic have all in some fashion negatively been impacting student enrollment into post-secondary across every system. Minnesota will continue to need more students of all backgrounds enrolling into post-secondary, persisting and completing college with the attainment of a degree and or a credential of value to both meet increasing workforce demands and, as importantly, provide for family-sustaining wage employment for working families, middle-class families. Senate File 687, if adopted, would create a racially equitable, first-dollar free tuition college program that would benefit 73,434 students in the state of Minnesota, 91.5% of whom would come from family incomes that are $80,000 or less annually. Of that group, nearly 60% would come from family incomes that are at $40,000 or less annually. And 60% of the student recipients from that group would be attending Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The costs are outlined at the bottom of the bill. Healthcare, education, engineering, business, construction, manufacturing, virtually any field we can think of in the 21st century, and many more fields are dependent upon a skilled workforce. The state of Minnesota needs more skilled workers who have obtained those skills through the attainment of a degree and or a credential of value. And that is primarily why I support Senate File 687. The broad and positive impact of reducing the student share to 36%, increasing LME to 115%, and extending state grant eligibility to 150 credits will not only be good for Minnesota, it'll be good for Minnesotans. Senate File 687 is a strong and bold bill that has the potential for creating a progressive, racially equitable, and powerful higher education system, and investing particularly in the expansion of the state grant program and secure a legacy in higher education, the effects of which may be felt for future generations to come. I strongly urge members of this committee to continue to powerfully lead on behalf of our students, Minnesota students, and secure the significant investments laid out in this bill. Making critical investments in higher education by way of this bill and or other bills will spur creativity, innovation, and prosperity in what I believe to be the most racially equitable and just ways. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Finally, we have Dr. Hillstrom, who will be our final testifier. So welcome.
Thank you so much. Nice to see you, sir. Asio and Tohoja, greetings, relatives. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for allowing me to have the opportunity to sit before you. I'm going to speak specifically to Proposal 8, but I want to provide a little context. Obviously, the issues connected to financing education are clear and apparent in front of you. And as a first-generation student and actually the first American Indian to graduate summa cum laude from Augsburg College, then to go on to get a doctorate at the University of Minnesota Duluth, I understand the issues that are in front of us around finances, as I currently believe I still have $200,000 in student loans. So that's some context, 20 grand a year. But I want to speak specifically to Proposal 8. 2015, the state of Minnesota legislature established some really important guidance, as you probably recall, around obtainments of educational obtainments in the college for all of our various racial groups. That 70% number was put out. We've fallen short across that in many of our categories. American Indians, according to the data that I most recently was able to find as of 2019, are still only at less than 30%, for example. Money is not the only thing that's going to solve this issue. And so Proposal 8 specifically challenges or creates an opportunity for challenging grants for anti-racist teaching and faculty development. In our college systems, we know many of our professors are experts in their content field. Fantastic, well-knowledged, deeply skilled people, but are not necessarily educators in the sense of that they were taught in pedagogy or andragogy and or other skill sets that are combined. As an American Indian student, seeing President Pibineau in 2007, I actually was in his office as a student who was feeling removed or obscured by part of the educational process, by well-intended good people, but nonetheless still marginalized. So it was surprising to see him here today. I offer that if we move into this area, we can address some of these other issues that are not just connected to financing. We know the Minnesota State Colleges have a guiding principle, the 2030 aims, right? And to eliminate educational gaps within the state college systems. Those aren't being eliminated solely by finances. It's going to take very intentional efforts to provide professional development for good-hearted, well-intentioned professionals in their expertise in their field, to become more robust educators, to enter into this, what Manip is referring to as this new mode of culturally validating pedagogy, where the individual is whole and complete and needs to be supported not only financially, but within their own ethnic and racial and social identities. Programs such as this grant challenge absolutely provide opportunities to do that. And I love the way that this proposal specifically laid out to support the Commissioner of Higher Ed with limited resources to provide this type of training in a concentrated way and allow institutions that are ready to do that work to do that work. So I ask you to recognize this bill not only for its financial challenges that it puts before us in supporting students, but also is to think holistically about the individuals that are sitting in front of you. As an American Indian, that was a critical component for me, and I'm grateful for those institutions that took time to do that. So with that, I'll say thank you to each of you, and thank you to Senator Putnam for ensuring that it's not only about finance, but it is about identity and clear approaches to being able to do that work. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions from our members? Thank you all so much. Senator Putnam, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for your attention to this incredibly important bill. Especially thank you to Dr. Peterson here, who's been my pal working with me on this for a couple of years now, and all our testifiers today. But I would like to note as well that many of the provisions in this bill were in our education bill last year, the one that unfortunately didn't get passed. A lot of this stuff went in there because it's stuff that's important that can actually help people. So thank you again for your attention. Thanks to our co-authors, you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Gustafson. And I look forward to talking more about this when we can.
Thank you so much, Senator Putnam. Would you like to have your bill Would you like to move your bill to be laid over as amended?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senate file 687 will be laid over as 687 as amended will be laid over. And with that, we will be adjourned. Thank you.